Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thanks for being here. I appreciate you showing up. How's your weekend? How's your week? How's your month? How's your life? What does your self-image look like today? Are you ready to go? Go where? I don't know. I don't know where I'm going. I just know I've been a busy bee. I've been mucking about in all my activities, and I have thoroughly used my time well this morning and yesterday. And I spent an equal amount of time sitting around and doing very little and just lackadaisically lazing. And I'm happy about that. I hope you can be happy with your condition and how you're spending your time right now. Last week we left off thinking about work ethic in teams. I believe I used the metaphor of a hand, or maybe a flock of geese. Leadership may or may not be involved, laissez-faire or say, but either way, it can be a very frustrating situation when we take it personally in our work lives, trying to find a balance between supposed friendship at the extreme of that, or at least just accountability for each other's actions at the least, you know? But I find that the best way in order to keep morale high is to focus on ourselves. We don't need to be bothered with what other people are doing. It's not necessary to get hung up in emotions over somebody else's actions. Fair or not fair, both exist from the exact same situational happening, and it's our judgment that brings it into this realm. So imagine how we can become part of the problem by being an emotional hindrance and reacting that way. So by focusing on our own efforts and practicing the golden rule, which is treat others as I want to be treated, or whatever, it doesn't matter. I think it goes either way, either direction. I think we all just need to treat each other well, you know. But that starts with acting well and modeling well. And so that's my feelings on the situation. And even from a leadership position, the best way we can lead others is by leading ourselves well, is by working on our own self-control, our own self-modality, and yet again, being our own master. The best master to be found is our own egos and being in control of our own will. And once we're in control of our own will and our own perceptions, and we're not emotionally reacting to everything like a forest fire, we can start to manifest things into reality. We are our thoughts. We become what we think we are. And it's not just hoodoo spiritualism here coming from Captain Gingerbread Man over here, but it's real. And it's not just the secret. I guess the secret was onto it kind of, but it was just very mainstream in a way. But we can bring things into our reality by controlling our thoughts and by gardening the mental turf that is within. And I know that that oversimplifies the situation. Inside our internal worlds is a dynamic sea of things. The subconscious, for me, seems to be infinite. There's an immense vastness of space within every single speck of life, maybe even within a rock, certainly within a blade of grass. So, just like on immense Mother Earth and this large planetary body that we all find our feet solely connected on, has vast ecological patterns and so much dynamism everywhere, storms and vast different types of climate, I saw a video on probably Facebook. I mean, I tried to avoid it heavily. I never saw myself being the kind of person to get on Facebook and watch reels. I still haven't signed up for TikTok or any of that other baloney. That's what I consider baloney. But having a coworker of mine who's very invested in some of these funny videos, he's always showing it to me, and I found myself pooping and watching these videos. Sorry if that's a little crude. But I saw this video of this gigantic ocean tanker being assaulted by huge ocean waves that had to have at least towered 100 feet over the deck. And this thing, this boat, really, this ship, this gigantic vessel, is hundreds of feet long, and it's getting swallowed by these waves. And it scared the crap out of me, obviously. But, like, within ourselves, we have to give allowance for vast movements within this vastness that I sense within myself, and I have to be inclined to believe that I'm not in a unique position to not share that vast thing without you. So I'm not oversimplifying this. I think there's an allowance for chaos in the world and even inside our own being. And so we need to garden, we need to practice, and we need to have effort towards crafting a goal-oriented-ish system for ourselves, at least healthily. I know that's a broad prescription to give to anybody. I don't even know how to approach that one. But when we have long established patterns of some sort of reactionary impact in ourselves, you know, parenting's an easy one, work's an easy one, interpersonal relationships of any quality or any character all have to do with this. There can be room for awareness of these things. And just like the Earth, Gaia, has patterns within her chaotic, dynamic environments everywhere, so do we. And there's meteorological services everywhere. Not everywhere, but getting much better with technology on the outside so that we can predict certain patterns. We can have technology such as meditation, mindfulness training, all the vast different routes of self-discovery that exists in our human worlds. And I'm speaking about books and maybe videos or maybe some speaker, some mentor that you can find. There is somebody in your life that I feel probably is already on this path. I think everybody is joining one another in this moment of self-discovery. And it doesn't all have to have the same exact face. It's not all the same exact story. We all find our own way, as unique as our own perceiving device, this body is as unique as our own path will be. But we're all walking each other home, because even though we all have these diverse and different paths, we're all going to end up in the same place, I believe. It's just this feeling. I don't have any empirical basis for it. It's bound up in psychedelia and my own readings and my ruminations and my tragedies and my comedies and all of my life pushes me towards feeling this oneness with the universe or God or life. Reality, nature, there's so many not very good descriptive words to describe this feeling. And I think it sits at the basis of all religiosity and spirituality and science and empiricism and logic and philosophy and even my own thought patterns and maybe yours. I can only talk from my own personal experience. But we're all in this experience, and experience itself can sometimes be shared and has similarities, which is how we can talk about it. It's how I think language was devised, is because of all the peculiar synchronicities that appear in life. In Ancient Man, when we were all sitting around the campfire thinking about what it was that we had done that day in order to forage for our food and to provide for our families and our tribe, perhaps. Even an agricultural society, when we're working together to hoard large amounts of food, there comes this moment in time where we all can come together and speak about common experience and share our journeys with each other. It's one of my favorite parts about this show, is it's a audio diary of sorts, and whether or not I have any viewership, I can always come back and see where my thought pattern was, and I can have this communion with me. Journaling, with the literary element of separation with the hand, there's some device in it that creates this separation between the paper and myself and allows me to put items down. And then we can share our items, our journaling, our audio diary, like I'm doing here, with others. And the hope is that we find each other in the middle. The middle of where? Who knows? I do know that it's here, right now. This recording was recorded in the past, several hours before it'll show up in the feeds. Yet, this moment happens when we all sit together, as I'm speaking now and you hear my words, even though they resonate from the past, no matter how far into the future somebody accesses this, there's a communion of moment in this idea. Right here, right now. Can you feel it? Do you know where your feet are? Are you in a car? Do you sense your connection to experience here and now? That's what I'm obsessed with, and I compulsively want to speak about with anybody, is the nuance of this here-ness and this now-ness and all these happenstances happening everywhere. I think it's beautiful that you're here with me, and that a moment can be made even from the past and resonate into the future like a wave, as a rock is thrown into a pond, all the reverberations covering every spare essence of reality and experience. When does the past and the future merge into now? Are they even real, other than a rumination of our thoughts about what we think we did or what we're going to do? Are we predictors in the clinical, clerical sense of a fortune teller? Do you know exactly where you'll be at 6 p.m. tomorrow night? Can you make it happen? Would the obsessive need to make a 6 p.m. happen, would the force and the control, even with that much time, even with all that time to practice and try to get into the exact space that you want to make happen, would you be able to do it, or would some chaotic implement come and make it unique as you approach the now again? And in that approach, you realize that you never left it. We're still here. So, those are some of the things that I think about when it comes to implementing self-control. Looking at these thoughts, where they come from, when I'm gardening and when I try to force lightly with a soft touch as I baby my little saplings of goodwill and integrity and novelty into some future force that can make me what I believe I am. We are our thoughts, people. You are anything that you can think yourself into. So don't think you're stuck. And when you find yourself on a team or in a relationship and you feel a resistance from the other, look at ourselves. Maybe we don't need to be in that job. Maybe we do. Maybe we just need tolerance and allowance for another person's experience, another person's essence to be. Allowance for somebody to have a bad day. Allowance for somebody to hold tension. I'm holding tension somewhere in my stomach. It will grow and bubble up later. At some point, we're human. So, don't beat yourself up. Examine it, practice. And don't cut off your fingers or try to throw the baby out with the bathwater in an effort to coax tomorrow into what you want it to be. Let's talk about drama for a little bit. And not external drama. I'm not worried about things outside now. Let's go inwards. Let's picture. All right, let's even go this inwards. If you have the time to sit down, try it. Go sit down. Go lay down. Just in the chair, on the ground, in your bed. Find a quiet space. Visualize this journey into the space. I like to think of a nice path. You know, pick a walk that you've done before, something that resonates with you, if you can visualize that. Maybe a nice forest path with trees on either side. It's perfect weather. The wind is softly hitting your face. You don't have a speck of moisture on you. You're not sweaty. You are just so goddamn comfortable as you walk down this path. And you keep putting one foot in front of the next and another one, and you keep journeying onwards, and all of a sudden you see this arch appear in the path, and it's full of roses and beautiful flowers of every single color and ornamentation, and inside the arch is a portal into a space of immense vastness. And in there is all of you. Every bit of you. The parts you like, the parts you push forward, the parts who manage your feelings and put out fires when you get out of control, parts you know about, parts you don't, shadowy figures that lurk and hide in cramped rooms and closets. A lot of the times, they don't even choose to be put there. We put them there. We've hid them away because we're ashamed or astonished or embarrassed. Pieces we don't want to talk about. But the more we push them away, the further we try to separate them from the family, from everybody else, the more they resist and they fight back and they struggle to get out of their constraints. It's sad to be in isolation and to isolate a piece of ourselves through shame can have depleting effects on our personality and can cause reactions as on the outside of the home, on the outside of our body, on the outside of our vessel of who we are. Regurgitations of unfelt feelings and undigested emotions find themselves on our loved ones and the people we care about most. And then other people's inner worlds and inner ecosystems and all their families, all their shames and all their shadowy figures and things they're pushing away can find grip on our own shit. And we can further increase another's pain and make another person more resistant to themselves. And in a way, further project more vomit and negativity on the world, especially in our close circles, but it spreads. All of our behavior is infectious, especially in society, as we socialize behaviors into agreed upon normalities, as it becomes okay to isolate others and to not think about another's feelings. But yes, of course we're infectious. Of course we have an effect. Of course we matter. But the theme of this show is on how, when we focus on our own shit and our own condition, how this is the most important thing to do. Our own family systems inside. So, drama. I like to think of this sort of family systems. It's an idea built that's used as an active therapeutic model called IFS, Internal Family Systems, by this dude named Richard Schwartz. Dick Schwartz, people. But that's not the only reason I like the drama, because it makes sense, and I thought about it a lot before I even approached it in therapy because of that one NF song, Mansion. NF is a rapper. I don't know if anybody's going to get that reference, but if you want to, just Google it right now and YouTube it, NF Mansion. And he uses the metaphor beautifully in that song. It's an act of poetry, if anything. And the drama that we can use to describe ourselves is an exploratory tool. It's a technique. Like technology has pushed our outer worlds forward, we can build technologies on the inside. I was just reading the Stephen King book called Dr. Sleep, and one of the main characters is this little girl, and she's like a beast when it comes to psychic powers. And Danny, the boy from The Shining, he has what he called The Shining, which is this telepathic and like mystic ability to communicate and tell the future, and most specifically see dead people, as in the movie shows. But the little girl's far more powerful than he could ever be. And she uses all these mental techniques to visualize boards of control, where she can, you know, turn the volume down, per se. And Danny, he traps ghosts in boxes, and he's able to trap spirits inside his own vast cavity of isness, inside these visualized boxes, and the inner dreamscapes of people that we all could have. I know in memory competitions, which the people who have all these extensive memories blow my mind, because I think it would take a lot of work to be able to reclaim any say I have to my short-term memory. Visualization seems to be one avenue that I could use to get there, because I do have very good abstract association techniques that I use to visualize and associate things. That's helped me become the sort of information box that I am. But I don't even have a real short-term memory, per se. But one of the techniques they use in memory competitions is people visualize these memory mansions. And so say you have to memorize a set of 100, 200,000 numbers or pictures or whatever sequence of mundane, tedious things that the judge is asking you to duplicate for him or her. The person would then set up a mansion, a room with 100 rooms, you know, this massive staircase of ascension of ideas. And in each of the rooms of this mansion or house would be these podiums, and on each podium would be a unit of the thing being memorized. And the idea is the visualization technique can turn this mundane, tedious set of boring bullshit into something that can be made meaningful. And so yet again, we come to my favorite idea in philosophy. It's going to be ontology, I think. One second, let me look that up. Sorry, quick Google search. But yes, ontology is the philosophy of being. It's looking at the framework of why and who we are And that framework is elusive. It's illusionary sometimes, and it may be not exactly existent in the way reality is and we are, but all the sensation equipment in between that and how we cognize and create our existence is a very personal thing, and we are sort of drivers in the wheel of our own car making it happen. So consider how much impact you have over your own condition. Consider how much impact you have over yourself. Investigate. Analyze. Don't bastardize. Try not to judge. Start with love. One of my foundation stones for me is this idea of love. Unconditioned love that we have for ourselves first. It starts with acceptance for who we are and our shadow, and then it spreads from our own self-acceptance into an unconditioned love for everybody. And I started this in reverse. I think you can go back into the beginning of the show and you'll hear almost the opposite as I contradict myself on video again. And that's part of growth, is contradicting ourselves and admitting it. But it starts first with our own love and acceptance for ourselves. And then I feel it should grow to encompass any and every speck of our own system that we impact. And that spreads and touches the world. And so I'm firmly optimistic that you are all beautiful, amazing, lovely, lovable people, and that single-handedly you can have an impact and change the world. I do. I think that's amazing. I think it's amazing that you're alive. And I'm so grateful that you woke up and took a breath this morning. I hope you know that. So, thanks for listening to my yarn. I may have tied myself in knots once or twice. We can always untangle. I'm going to go grab a good book, and then we'll see how Odin's doing this fine morning. In the interest of imagery, this week I want to read from a fiction book from one of my favorite authors. His name's named Terry Pratchett. This is from Thud. It's about trolls and dwarves and a murder mystery and the Night's Watch, which is basically the police force of one of the biggest cities in the fictional universe of Discworld. It's a wonderful series. It's very funny. But a lot of my imagery comes from fiction and comes from building up fantastic scenes and ideas from fantastic things that could never exist in reality. And so when we're using our own dramas and we're building our own systems, it can be very open-ended, especially if you have an imagination for it. Here goes. So the main character, Vimes, he basically has a phone, but it's not a real phone. It's an imp, a demon, that's in a box that is basically his organizer. It's called a disorganizer. And it's rather funny. So I thought the scene was pretty good. "You've been adding the numbers wrong," said the imp. "You don't always carry the tins." "And how would you know that?" Vimes demanded. "You mutter to yourself," said the imp. "You eavesdrop on me. It's my job. I can't switch off my ears. I have to listen. That's how I know about the appointments." Vimes picked up the petty cash report and glanced at the messy columns of figures. He prided himself on what he had since infancy called sums. Yes, he knew he plotted a bit, but he got there in the end. "You think you could do better?" he said. "Let me out and give me a pencil," said the imp. Vimes shrugged. It had been a strange day after all. He opened the little cage door. The imp was a very pale green and translucent, little more than a creature made out of colored air. But it was able to grip the tiny pencil stub. It ran up and down the column of figures in the petty cash book, and Vimes was pleased to hear it mutter to itself. "It's out by $3.05, it reported after a few seconds. "That's fine, then," said Vimes. "But the money is not accounted for." "Oh, yes, it is," said Vimes. "It was stolen by Nobby Knops, but always is. He never steals more than $4.50. "Would you like to make an appointment for a disciplinary interview?" said the imp, hopefully. "Of course not. I'm signing it off now. Thank you. Can you add up the other dockets?" The imp beamed. "Absolutely." Vimes left the imp scribbling happily and walked over to the window. "They don't acknowledge our law, and they undermine our city, That's just a bunch of deep downers here to keep their fellow dwarves on the straight seam. How far do those tunnels go? Dwarves dig like crazy, but why here? What are they looking for? Sure any hell you choose. There's no treasure trove under this city, no sleeping dragon, no secret kingdom. There's just water and mud and darkness. Imp, he said, turning around. Yes, insert name here. You see that big pile of paper in the corner? Said Vimes, pointing. Somewhere in there are the gate guide reports for the past 6 months. Can you compare them with the last week's? Can you compare the number of dunny wagons leaving the wagon? Dunny wagon, not found in root dictionary. Searching slang dictionary. Meep, 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 meep. Dunny wagon. Noun. Cart for carrying night soil. See also honey wagon, treasure wagon, midnight special, gong wagon, and variants. So, there's an example. This thing's pretty funny. Like, the way he builds up these figures has always been fantastic to me. All right, one little last one. What was this? The creature swam through a mind. It had seen thousands of minds since the universe began, but there was something strange about this one. It looked like a city. Ghostly, wavering buildings appeared through a drizzle of midnight rain. Of course, no two minds were alike. The creature was old, although it'd be more accurate to say that it had existed for a long time. When, at the start of all things, the primordial clouds of mind had collapsed into gods and demons and souls of all levels, it had been among those who had never drifted close to a major accretion. So it had entered the universe aimlessly, without task or affiliation, a scrap of being blown free, fitting in wherever it could, a sort of complicated thought looking for the right kind of mind. Currently, that is to say, for the past 10,000 years, it had found work as a superstition. And now I was in this strange, dark city. There was movement around it. The place was alive, and it rained. For a moment, just then, it had sensed an open door, a spasm of rage it could use. But just as it leapt to take advantage, something invisible and strong had grabbed it and flung it away. Strange. With the flick of its tail, it disappeared into an alley. Alright. I feel I've chosen enough that you have no idea what the fuck that story's about, but still. Did you have any sort of imagery in your head? Did you build a cool scene? When people tell me stories, I can't help it. My imaginatorium is off the chains and just starts its own thing, with or without my consent. But perhaps use a good story. Try practicing some interesting scenes that you can build. You're a world creator. You can use these techniques and technologies inside your own head to garden and create better or more efficient futures for yourself. Let's go find out.
Hello, this is Astro. I don't really have so much to say, so...
What'd you do yesterday?
I forgot.
You did not. You got a memory like a turtle or an elephant.
This is going to be short.
You're short.
Hey, I'm done.
Why are you so short?
I'm done.
You got short temper?
You're making fun of me.
You got marker all over you. Why you got marker all over your face?
Because my friend did it.
You're a friendly guy.
You made me like that.
I love you. Thank you.
Wake up.
Have a great week. Bye.